And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. Do you know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at Motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6. And help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across USA and around the world, we're Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. If you can't listen live overnight, you can listen when and where you want right there on your smartphone. All right, some new polls are out.
All right, let's go to the polls.
Trying to figure out on fiscal matters where the United States, the citizens of the United States stand.
Okay.
It's always an interesting path to go down, especially when different polls are put out. For example, it was back in September of 21.
Wow.
When the polling came out showing that Americans were concerned and with government spending and did not want the child tax credit to be extended, because at that point, that's what the poll said, because they believe that the spending was leading to inflation.
Yeah.
Then I think it was probably November, another poll came out that said, yes, Americans are concerned with inflation and government spending, but they want the government to be giving them a check in order to get through the times that we're seeing right now. The majority wanted a federal government check. Mm-hmm. And we went, okay, what's going on here? Do we have a public that is saying, look, we want government spending, we want more money from the government, but could you magically not make inflation happen? Could you magically not make the debt increase? And so it's always interesting to figure out, by the way they ask the question, where the public actually stands. And whether it's just the answer that they believe they have to give, which is the right answer, or whether they truly mean it.
Right.
Now, here's the latest poll on the national debt. More than half of the nation's likely voters say they're very concerned about the size of the nation's national debt, and 75% are at least somewhat concerned. Now, does that mean that more than half the voters that say they're very concerned? I'm very concerned with the debt, but could you give me a check? Can you do both? Cut everybody else, but give me the check.
Well, are we hearing anyone cry out that we need to stop, you know, helping people? No, quite the opposite.
No.
It's because, right, again, because of inflation and what's going on with the economy, people are drowning. And so when they're drowning, they're going to reach out to anybody and everybody. And, of course, the federal government is going to be first in line.
Here's how the question was asked. The U.S. national debt is now more than $31 trillion. How concerned are you about the size of the national debt? Rasmussen did this January 2nd through the 4th.
Okay.
76% said they are at least somewhat concerned. 53% said they're very worried about the debt. 21%, which is roughly the amount of admitted liberals in the United States, said they're not concerned.
Or Maybe the number of people that have just plain given up.
Majorities of every political category, 87% of Republicans, 67% of Democrats, and 53% of voters not affiliated with either major party are at least somewhat concerned about the size of the U.S. debt. However, 69% of Republicans, unaffiliated voters, 53%, and Democrats, 38%, very concerned about the debt. So there you go. Democratic voters are also far more likely than Republicans and unaffiliated voters to approve the $1.7 trillion omnibus spending bill President Joe Biden signed last week into law. 73% of Democrats say they were for it. Only 21% of Republicans and 40% of unaffiliated voters. So there you go. So that I believe this was also that was also the other publications had the omnibus bill. So so Democrats, when you've got 73%, Democrats don't care about putting the burden on young people, and they're willing to say that publicly.
You had Jamie Dimon yesterday. I came out and said the debt is a massive problem. It is a crisis that is right. We're right there on the brink here of this crisis. Yep. And, talking about the Fed, he thinks the Fed may well go above 6%, and we'll see what happens at the end of the month. That is when you have CEOs that start talking about this, and I don't know how long, I'd have to go back and check how long he's been talking about this. We've been talking about it for a long, long time. Anybody knows that cares about it knows why this is a massive problem. And you've got interest rates going up, which means that it's becoming harder and harder to service the interest on the national debt. And at the point that we can no longer serve the interest on the national debt or service the interest on the national debt, we are absolutely in crisis mode. And I can't tell you what happens.
Well, we'll be able to service the interest on the debt for a significant period of time, but there will have to be cuts because if you don't do cuts, because of the increase itself in the interest rate and what we how we finance the debt, that in itself, if we keep, for example, I saw one of the Republicans' goals is for the next 10 years, keep spending at 2022 levels.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's say, the budget's already been done for 2024, which would be this, October?
Yeah.
This coming October, you say, okay, we're going to keep it at 2022 levels. Well, inflation is eaten in by that time from 2022 levels. Inflation at that point has already significantly ate into the value of the dollar to begin with, what you have to buy and what you have to do. And then the interest rate at that particular point, which could be, 6%. What are you paying for treasury bills? And it may not be, it could be, you might be paying more because really the relation is if you can't find, if we're not buying our own debt anymore, and you can't find people to buy a treasury bill at 6%, you've got to go 7%, 8%. That's the reality of treasury bills. So it isn't directly related to what the Fed rate is. It will increase, but the fact is you've got a double whammy here. The fact that the Fed isn't buying its own debt, that's where we're headed. When the Fed isn't buying, we're not printing money to buy our own debt. Because that's inflationary, duh.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the double whammy of just the interest rates in general going up, and fewer people willing to buy treasury bills, And so how do you sell them? You got to increase the interest rate. That's a problem that we have. And so you look at this and you say the Democrats aren't concerned at all about the debt. By the polling, they're not concerned. But, oh, I know what I want to say. And you look at Republicans, where Republicans, 87% somewhat, at least somewhat concerned about the size of the national debt. Well, but we also know Republicans are fickle. Sorry, I'm a cynic. Why? Get rid of Obamacare. Get rid of Obamacare. Get rid of Obamacare. Republicans get the House and Senate. Well, no. Get rid of the mandates. Get rid of us paying for it, but give us the free stuff. Yeah, that's government spending that nobody's paying for, which will increase the debt. We don't care. We just want to give us the free stuff.
Well, that's it.
That's why Obamacare.
I want the help now. I want the air now. I'm drowning.
That's why Obamacare didn't get overturned completely.
Right. It was the campaign promise in 2016, right. And by 2017, they couldn't get it done.
Nope.
And that's exactly what you see here. And you know, this is Jamie Dimon making the point that, you know, it's cumulative, which is the point we're making. But when the private sector starts looking at that in a big way, and Chase, you know, J.P. Morgan Chase is no small organization. They're a global banking organization. They get it. They understand why this is crucial. Because it is a growing problem that has right now zero political will to turn around. There is none. There's no political will to tap the brakes.
Well, how the question should be asked, are you more concerned about the debt or, in order to handle the debt, government cutting back on spending?
Right.
Let's see what that poll says.
Well, would you support in order to help relieve the national debt? Are you in favor of cuts? And then you ask the types of cuts. That's where it gets. Oh, yeah, they need to cut. For those people over there, they need to cut that spending. What's the first thing we always hear? Foreign aid. Cut it to zero. Okay. That's not going to happen, but all right, what if you cut it to zero? That's not a drop in the bucket. It isn't. It's massive programs that continue to grow and grow and grow and grow. And right now, because the interest rate is jumping, the interest on the debt is a bigger cost, which means that you've got to add to that in terms of what we need to spend every year. What does that mean? Well, if the revenue is not going to match or exceed that, it means greater debt. And that's exactly what Jamie Dimon means when he's talking about cumulative effect and something we've been talking about. When you have a significant portion of the private sector that is concerned about that, because if the U.S. gets into a default position ever on the debt, I don't know what happens from that point.
Yeah, before we even get to that point, though, it's the fact of when you're going to have to cut, the American public's going to go crazy.
Well, and the question is, because you can't, politically, you can't cut until you have to, which means the end. You can't cut.
Well, right. Well,
and that's the thing. There is no political will to cut until you reach that point of crisis, and then everything's too late anyway. Right. That level of crisis will be something we have never seen.
Well, as we have said, if we go up, because I'm reading, you know, I was looking to see if there's any new projection for the debt for 2023. What I found was the CNN story from like early November that said interest on the debt could soon be over the defense budget, which would make it over $800 billion,
mm-hmm.
which means you've gone from roughly $250 billion to $800 billion or $850 billion, at $600 billion more. Well, if you just keep next year, as the Republicans are promising, cap spending at 2022 levels, well, if you cap it there and you've got enough extra $600 billion, you got to find $600 billion to cut. And that's not also including the inflation that you have felt in that period of time.
Right.
How do you do that?
Right.
What do you start cutting? You know, Republicans have said, okay, it's time to start cutting parts of defense. What part? Oh, the woke part. No, that's policy. That's not money's being spent anyway, just being spent in other areas.
Right.
That's a trickle of the of what we spend on defense.
That's all for show.
Right.
Do something real.
Right. What are you actually going to do? And then what are you going to do about Social Security and Medicare? And then the increase of cost of Obamacare.
Mm.
You going to start cutting Obamacare?
Right.
What are you going to cut?
Right.
Foreign aid. Cut out all foreign aid.
Mm-hmm.
You're at $100 billion. You still and by the way, that's even being I'm being liberal on that amount. I don't believe it's $100 billion yet.
Right. Right.
But yeah. Let's say you cut it as $100 billion. You still got $500 billion to cut, and inflation still going up. So the next year it may be $700 billion that you have to cut. So now we've taken foreign aid out.
Right.
And you still don't have the problem nearly solved. What do you cut?
And you've signaled to the world that you're heading into crisis mode, and you know it.
Yeah. And that's the reality of what we're dealing with, but nobody wishes to deal with reality. Let's find out. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, really? Oh, hold it. So Harry thinks that William wants his organs?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let's focus on that for a little bit.
Harry's not happy. Let's find out why. The top five reasons why Harry is unhappy. The five things you need to know about his unhappy state of mind.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Starting and charging system-related issues are one of the most common causes of winter breakdowns. So when your batteries talk, it's important you listen. Knowing the warning signs that could indicate your electrical system needs attention can help you avoid getting stuck out in the cold this winter. Have your batteries inspected by a professional technician if you smell any unusual or strong odors coming from the battery box. A pungent odor could indicate chemicals are escaping from a damaged or overcharged battery.
This report brought to you by Lubrifiner, engineering filters that are built to do more for heavy-duty fleets since 1996.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Shop at Iowa80.com for the best selection of everything for your truck. Bumpers, fenders, toolboxes, lights, interior, and more. Iowa80.com, your truck.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. All right, I did some analysis. Total foreign aid for 2023 from the U.S. government, $61.7 billion. So I just threw out, you know, $100 billion just to have a close figure for it to show how because I know what the cry will be from the public.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yep. you can't cut us, cut foreign aid. Okay, fine.
That's what I was saying earlier is that the first thing is, well, cut foreign aid.
Right.
Because if you go to someone, and you know that's the thing, if you're going to talk and to people the way that pollsters do, and you know we're going to have this big town hall about this, then inevitably the first thing is, well, we need to cut foreign aid. We don't need to be giving a dime to anyone if we can't get our house in order. Okay, great. You haven't solved the problem. We'll take that, and then now what?
Right. That would be 10% of the projected increase of the deficit. The debt this year.
Right.
So you've got still for this year another $540 billion.
And the message that you would send by cutting, if you were to cut 100% of foreign aid,
probably would be panic in the markets.
It would absolutely panic the markets.
Yep. That's the problem that
you're signaling. You're sending up a flare at that point.
So if you're still borrowing a 30 to 40% of the budget that you have right now, and you have to add another $540 billion, and then inflation stays high for the next couple of years at that particular point, because it's not just inflation. It's getting people to buy treasury bills.
Right, which you have to make them attractive by raising the rates.
And that's the problem that you have, because the government has said, well, okay, the fact that we've been doing, and by the way, we warned on this. We warned not only when Democrats were spending, we warned when Trump came out and said, we need to borrow trillions of dollars because the interest rates are low to put into the infrastructure. And we sat here and argued with Republicans who were Trump supporters saying that's a dumb idea. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, no, because we can borrow it low. You have no idea how it works. We haven't paid back any principal. The principal sticks on the books, and the principal now would be being paid for those trillions of dollars at the current rate that Treasury bills are going for now. You're not paying off the principal.
No, you're doing more damage.
Yeah. So, I mean, across the board, and that's why I worry, because Republicans will jump on the bandwagon of spending if they believe it fits what they want.
Fourth Branch of Government, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So when I was talking about Trump back when he was running for office, I mean, that was how quickly Republicans would change, because the whole swamp was based on the fact, as we remember, that Paul Ryan wouldn't back off on Boehner's deal that he made with the Democrats. So the swamp, and that's, you know, Trump coined that for Republican leadership cooperating and spending too much money with the Democrats. Well, by the time we got to spring of 2016, late winter, early spring of 2016, when Trump was running, he proposed borrowing trillions of dollars in order to, you know, as part of the, you know, his campaign. What we should do is borrow trillions of dollars, and because interest rates are so low.
Right.
And it'd be great because we can, you know, borrow all this money. He backed off on it. All right. He backed off on it. But my comment wasn't about Trump. It was so many Republican supporters who called and we said, that's a dumb idea. And they were furious at us. No, it's a great idea. They had no idea how it worked. They had no idea the fact that we weren't paying off principal. All that debt would roll over as we continue, because debt is financed by long term, medium term and short term. Treasury bills
and securities. Even the wonks, a number of them believed or acted like they believed that interest rates would be near zero forever.
Yeah. That was probably
what prompted Trump, because it looked at that point, it looked like, well, there's no will to raise interest rates. There's no reason to raise interest rates. Right. I mean, that's, everything's fine. We're not going to do it. It's not going to go anywhere. But, oh, wait a minute. Oh, what's that virus? We should spend. We should spend more. Let's spend a lot more. We're going to spend like there's no tomorrow, because there might not be a tomorrow. So, oh, wait a minute. Now the national debt is at $31 trillion.
Well, also don't forget the sensitivity of weakening the market by buying our own debt. Mm-hmm. For how long were we buying our own debt?
Mm-hmm.
Which means we're printing money not based on the wealth increase of goods and services in our economy. We're simply printing money so we can buy our own debt, which is lowering the value of the dollar, which increases inflation.
Right.
And so we were doing that, and then COVID came along, and let's just give money out left and right and borrow all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And we get ourselves into this situation. We had warned for the longest time, it may not be coming this year or next year. Inflation is coming. You can't do these, as we have always stated, and I don't know why people think it. You can manipulate an economy. You cannot change economics.
No.
And this is the evidence right now to back up what we've always said. You can't change economics.
Nope.
And that's what we're seeing. It's as reliable as gravity. Yeah. On the Earth.
On Earth.
Because gravity isn't reliable when you're out in space. Wait for that call.
But that is where we are.
And so my point is, Republicans will say they're against the debt, And they used to be. We know. We could tell whenever we would talk about it 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, during the Bush administration. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Even. Beginning of Obama administration, even. People were extremely concerned. The Tea Party was based on the fact of the incredible spending that came out of the whole TARP thing.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, it just disappeared.
Yeah.
It just, like, boom.
Yep.
2016, 2017, Republicans were no longer concerned with it. And then when we got to Obamacare, which, repeal it. Well, no, repeal the mandate and the payment for it.
Mm-hmm.
Repeal the mandate, but don't stop the subsidies.
Right.
Keep it going. Right. We like to keep the spending going,
mm-hmm.
but take the mandate off. It's like, wow. And so I don't have any confidence. And I want to be proven wrong. I want to be proven wrong that the Republicans I will find no pleasure in being right. I want to absolutely be proven wrong. And you can call up and you can shove it in my face if I'm wrong. That's how happy I'll be. But sorry, I don't have confidence that the Republican rank and file voter truly wishes to cut spending in order to reduce the deficit. I don't.
Well, there is no political will, and I don't think that there will be any political will in my lifetime that, and hopefully it doesn't happen in my lifetime, that the only way that there's going to be a cut is if you get to that point and you cross that brink.
It's not going to be a good point.
Nope. The cuts will happen because it's over.
I don't want to live in that economic and depression that happens.
And by the way, as we get closer and closer to it, the entire world will see it. There is no hiding this.
Right.
The U.S. national debt is not a secret.
Well, the government will just give money to all of the banks and financial institutions. Oh, wait a minute. There is no money.
Yeah, there is no money.
I wanted to do a repeat of 2008, 2009.
There's nothing to back anything. Because at that point, there is no reason to invest in the U.S. In fact, it's quite the opposite. And if you can't invest in the U.S., where can you put your money? Well, that's where a global economic collapse lives, right there in that moment.
You know, but that was another thing. I remember when Trump was running and said, well, look, we can pay 50 cents on a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wow, he doesn't even
understand. You can't negotiate that.
He doesn't
the
even
moment you say that.
That always surprised me because for smart as he was, I said, he doesn't understand you can't do that. And remember, the response from a lot of his supporters, well, it'd be a great idea, pay 50 cents on a dollar. Well, then nobody's going to buy. You can't finance the debt that you have now.
At that point, it's over.
Yeah, it's over. All confidence is lost.
You might as well be at the point of default at that moment if you're trying to renegotiate the debt. It is not renegotiable.
And so, no, I don't have, this is, I get to have, this can be Wednesday Cynic Day,
mm-hmm.
where I hope to be proven wrong, where I hope that this country actually does care. And I understand a significant portion of our audience is mm-hmm. conservative and agrees with us on mm-hmm. this and has for a while. I'm talking about the masses in general, including the masses in the Republican Party that vote Republican. And it's based on what I've seen. It's not based on just, oh, I just have this opinion based on nothing. It's what I've seen.
Yeah.
It's what we've seen over the last, you know, 6-7 years about the change in attitude of Republicans towards spending. Not conservatives. I know conservatives are different. But all Republicans are not true conservatives. They claim they are. I can't tell you how many times in the past, well, I'm more conservative than you guys. Really, what do you think about these issues? And after it's like, you're not a conservative.
You know, one of the, I don't know if I could call it a bright point. One positive that I think has happened in recent years is the number of people who have become contractors, even if they're only doing it on a part-time basis, the gig economy. And this is why the liberals don't want that in play. Oh, you're not being treated equally. You're not being as if becoming a contractor, a driver for Lyft or Uber. There should be a guaranteed income. That's what the liberals, they want to approach that and treat it that way. Why? Because they can't have people learning how to create wealth for themselves. And while it may be on a very small level for individuals collectively, it's a big deal because of the number of people that participate in that. Content creators, the same thing. The overwhelming majority of people aren't engaging in that. But if you combine all these categories where people have discovered other ways to make money and create wealth and understand the multipliers and what scale means and everything else, it has the potential of leading to a point where there is a demand for change. We're light years from that. But that is, right now, one bright point is that people are learning about what it takes to run business, what it takes to create wealth.
One reality is people know that inflation is tied to spending. Mm-hmm. Democrats don't seem to care, but the rest of the country seems to at least recognize it, and there's more of a caring of it, which means mm-hmm. You know, okay, we can talk about it, but I'm really going to get my money from the government, or I'm just going to have to suffer through inflation and higher prices. And so that also could be a cause for maybe, some change out there, because yeah. Americans are finally feeling the consequences of the politicians that they put in office.
Right.
And their own opinion that we can keep spending.
Right.
So that to me is at least you can't say we're not warned, but then I think about it. The government has sold us, the left that's controlled so much of the government has told us that we can supply all of our energy with wind and solar. We know
right.
it's all
right.
a lie.
Right.
And they keep going further. And all of a sudden, we feel the consequences. California, the warning's out. They know.
Mm-hmm.
Texas knows. The Southeast just found out. There's not enough electricity when you really need it. Why? Because of government policy. Is anybody really upset? They're upset for that moment when they don't have the electricity. But do they put two and two together and say, we can't allow this? Who are the politicians that are against this? I mean, is there any connection to the problems that we have today from the American voter as to why it's happening, that this is something that we have willed as a country? We have chosen the path that we are on right now. This isn't because of forces outside of our control. This is all what we have chosen as a nation. And it's time to change and move in a different direction. And you've got a Democratic Party right now that is more radical. Think about it. Tell me a minority leader of the Democratic Party that's as radical as Hakeem Jeffries on the opinions that he holds. You could say that Nancy Pelosi was a moderate conservative compared to him.
Mm.
They want the squad, basically, to control the Democratic Party. As radical as you can imagine, with all the problems that radical mindset, when put into action, is created in this country.
Yep. And that's the future of that party.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can make different choices, but at some point, when it comes to the national debt, there won't be a choice.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, I saw the story yesterday. We rarely talk wrestling, but this is really of interest. I saw the story. Stephanie McMahon resigned as chairwoman and co-CEO of WWE. And Vince McMahon announced intentions to return to the company ahead of media rights negotiations. WWE's media rights with Fox and the USA Network are set to expire in 2024. J.P. Morgan was hired to handle a possible sale of WWE with companies such as Comcast, Fox Corporation, Warner Brothers, Discovery, Netflix, Amazon, Endeavor Group Holdings. These are the companies apparently expressing interest.
Right.
Liberty Media with Saudi Arabia's public investment fund also on the list.
Yeah. All right.
So we'll have Live Wrestling.
Yeah. I don't follow it at all.
Neither do I.
But it's certainly making the headlines now.
I mean, this story, yeah.
Because you I don't know what the content brings in terms of ratings, but it's still pretty high. They still get high ratings. But if you could take that and then push it out more, if a Netflix could capitalize on that, where basically the only place you're going to see WWE from this point on is on a Netflix. You mentioned Liberty Media. That's John Malone.
Right. Now an update from Yahoo is that reportedly is being sold to Saudi Arabia's public investment fund.
How does that change everything, I wonder, with the fans? Or does it? Does it change anything with them? I really wonder.
I don't know. That's
because that's an American sport, right?
Yep.
And is this, if the Saudis are going to buy it, does it change anything with the fans?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Yeah, just we had seen something. By the way, download our Red Eye Radio app today because we told you to, and listen when and where you want. We were just going through Twitter, and it was like I had seen the story that Stephanie McMahon had stepped down from WWE, Worldwide Wrestling, or World Entertainment Wrestling, whatever it is now.
Worldwide Entertainment?
Worldwide Entertainment, exactly.
Wrestling Entertainment?
And
whatever.
And that Vince was coming back, but the reason was to get their media for 2024. And then stories came out that, no, they were preparing to sell it. And then Yahoo came out with the story that they used Steve Mulllassen, who was a head of social media for pro wrestling, saying that the Saudis were going to buy it. The public investment fund was going to buy it. I don't have. I checked the Wall Street Journal. I checked all the different financial publications, CNBC. I haven't seen anybody else say that. Where did you say you believe he got that story from? What was the
website?
Well,
it was originally, actually, that story, Yahoo, originally, they basically republished it, and it was published from Coming Soon, which is a, you know, entertainment website. That's where it originally appeared. And Mulhouse and his company that he writes for don't have a significant following. So I don't know where he got the DAZN wrestling that he reports for has fewer than 1,000 followers. So I really don't know. I haven't seen any major... media
and
on the stories.
I just checked. I mean, the Wall Street Journal has, you know, they and they'd be on that immediately.
I would think
that's why you okay. I'm suspicious about the sources here, because Wall Street Journal would be on that immediately. CNBC would be on that. I mean, it'd be huge business news,
mm-hmm.
huge news.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about, you know, that Stephanie, you know, stepping down and Vince McMahon coming back, mm-hmm. but they don't say anything even about a possible sale happening now.
Right. Right.
So, and the story is it's been sold. So we'll see whether that ends up being true or not. But just wanted to clarify that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we live in interesting times, don't we?
We do.
Our favorite story of the day, and I'm speaking for you here.
Okay.
Is the analysis from Andrew McCarthy and his column yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
On Biden's mishandling of classified information complicates politics for the Department of Justice, Trump probes. Don't underestimate Joe's ability to F things up. That's the notorious assessment by former President Barack Obama of his vice president's proclivities in undoubtedly getting a workout at the Biden Justice Department these days. I mean,
absolutely no doubt. And it is a beautiful statement and summary of what's going on right now, because here you have, you know, the left has gone after Donald Trump repeatedly over and over and over again, and they found nothing. They wanted you to believe that there was something tangible with the whole Russian hoax when they brought the dossier to light. But even at the beginning of that, the media, remember BuzzFeed? Well, we can't really confirm that any of this is true, but we're going to go with it anyway. But it was tangible. It was something. Well, over and over again, they didn't have anything tangible. Then his tax records and everything. But the raid on Mar-a-Lago gave them something tangible, and then they could stretch it out by having the DOJ assign a special prosecutor to that case. And we're going to just, you know, basically run this all the way through 24. But there was something tangible in that there really is no one, or was no one by that point, saying that those documents weren't there at Mar-a-Lago. So you had a big show in the FBI raid of Mar-a-Lago while Trump wasn't there, so that they had plenty of room to make a show for the media, and then they had something tangible. And then you had people, you know, I think from both sides of the aisle going, oh, as it progressed on, okay, well, we'll see what happens here. And the question was, is there political will at the DOJ for Merrick Garland to pursue anything against Trump? And, you know, the answer for us is, oh, yeah, well, we think he would. But then the documents are found at Biden's office at the University of Pennsylvania.
And the organization that was helped to be created by $54 million in anonymous donations from China.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you couldn't. When I saw that yesterday, I just went, oh, my gosh, now it's tying everything together. This is like, I'm sorry, I'm thinking Seinfeld. Gold, Jerry, gold.
No,
this is,
I mean,
gold.
Andrew McCarthy had, it should be framed. The opening sentence of his analysis here. Because you know people, we've been talking about for a long time, for a number of years, but especially, you know, when Biden announced he was running. We said, look, there's a tremendous liability in Hunter Biden, but there are a number of liabilities in Joe Biden. And that's why there was that quote from his former boss, because it's true. Joe Biden is a walking liability. I'm wondering what classified information he gave to that guy wearing the Salvation Army uniform the other day.
You know, my question. You know, it was interesting because I'm reading the story, and then this was earlier in the show. It was during a break or maybe even our pre-show meeting. And I think you said, I thought it was you who said, well, he wasn't even president. He was vice president.
I said that the other day on the show. Yeah.
Was it on the show? Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I thought you had said it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just it, that keeps hitting me. Why would he have? Why would Joe Biden, who really didn't do much during the Biden administration or during the Obama administration?
Right.
He wasn't involved in all this stuff.
Right.
And it was like, what's
why would he have
what's
silence?
Going on? Right. And Jonathan Turley writes, Biden broke his silence after a few days and said he was surprised by the discovery. However, as expected, he cited counsel in saying no more and asking no question or answering no questions. However, this is one explanation, to quote the president, on how could this possibly happen?
Mm-hmm.
And he writes, Biden may have taken the secret documents for a book, his book, Promise Me Dad. He said, Biden also said, I don't know what's in the documents. My lawyers have not suggested I ask what documents they were. And he writes, that was a bit jumbled. He goes, presumably he was saying that his lawyers suggested that he not ask what the documents were.
Right.
The question is why? The president has full security clearance.
Right.
If the president was committed to addressing any national security risk, he would want to know what it was.
Right. If I were president, I would demand to know.
Right. And then want to offer any recollection on how or when they have, you know, they may have been used. But he said, you know, his book is, it's interesting that he goes, this may be about, you know, him writing his book. He said, according to reports, the clearly marked classified documents include those at the highly classified, top secreted, sensitive, compartmented information, TSSCI level. Those documents reportedly included material relating to Iran, Ukraine, and the United Kingdom. When the documents on such top subjects were found at Mar-a-Lago, media experts immediately opined that Donald Trump may have sold material or was endangering national security for a book or vanity. For 2 days, Biden had refused to answer questions from reporters as his allies in the media struggle to spin out this scandal. And then they say his silence is hardly surprising. This was the first 2 days. And then he goes on to criticize him and saying that, look, Biden is often, he says, he expresses revulsion rather than responsibility. And he goes, he will defame anybody. The two, you know, and then he mentions the two Border Patrol agents and whipping when he had no idea what the facts were. And he says, Biden may have to take responsibility for this debacle, but he faces a potential criminal charge. While Attorney General Merrick Garland has again refused to appoint a special counsel, any acknowledgement of Biden's knowledge or interaction with the documents could have serious legal ramifications. These documents may have been relevant to his last book. The book, Promise Me Dad, released in November of 2017, was marketed as his insider view of America's relations with countries like Iran and Ukraine.
Hmm.
As vice president, Biden traveled more than 100,000 miles that year across the world dealing with crises in Ukraine, Central America, and Iraq. If he worked off these documents, it is impossible to deny the violation or his hypocrisy on his comments on Mar-a-Lago. He is now the subject of the, because I guess the point would be, you know, he's working on his book and using classified information to do so.
Right.
Whether he was still vice president or the book came out in 2017, I don't know what month after he was vice president, was he using that information to write his book? And so, but the thing that really gets you is where he, and you and I both recognize this immediately when we saw this, where he said, you know, his lawyers are suggesting really that he not ask what the documents were. And at that point, I went, well, he's taking the fifth.
Right.
He's sending the message, I'm taking the fifth on this.
Right.
Well, you're President of the United States. If these are top secret things, would you be asking?
I would demand to know right away.
If you didn't know.
Right.
I didn't know. That's what he said. I have no idea what this is. And my lawyers are telling me not to find out what it is. Does that make sense?
Well,
no.
Okay. Here's the question. Imagine Biden learns of this immediately. And then he does ask. He says, I need to know what's in what those documents are. And his lawyer says, don't ask what they are. Now you've got me curious. Because
either way, it's damning because the lawyer's saying you could be in what the lawyer's saying to him is you could be in legal trouble. That your legal trouble is more of a concern of you solving something of this.
Because the lawyer may be trying to build out plausible deniability. But why? He has the top secret clearance of anybody.
Right now, yes.
So what you're saying is it is in your best interest to not be told what this is.
As Turley writes, the question is why? If the president is committed to addressing any national security risk, he would want to know and then want to offer any recollection on how or when they may have been used.
Right. Why they are there. Why are those documents there?
Now, again, I mean, look, the blue whale in the living room, when you look at other things, for example, the Hunter Biden, you know, Hunter Biden's business activities where, you know, he has stated, I knew nothing about it. Now he's just silent.
Right.
But he has said he knew nothing on it. Then the voicemail came out. And even after the voicemail came out, Karine Jean-Pierre still says he sticks to his previous comments.
Right.
So the White House has officially said that, you know, even though the voicemail has come out and in emails, Hunter Biden talked about what he had to give his father. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
And he's still denying, I don't know anything about the business, you know, at all. So we know that he will lie. Everyone knows that's such an obvious lie. And that's one of the reasons I think the Democrats are scared, because you look at that and you go, oh, God, we're screwed.
Well,
and the other point I would bring up is think about all that the left has invested in Biden, who is a horrible politician to invest anything in and to invest to basically, as the media has done, completely destroy their credibility over the Hunter Biden laptop story. You think about it.
Right.
They've completely destroyed their credibility. And now, you know, their cooperation in censoring. And now with the Twitter story and Elon Musk story, it's just amazing that it would be Biden would be the one that they would go to no ends to hide the truth from the American public.
That's the hill they want to die on.
Yeah.
Why?
Why is Biden the hill? It's amazing.
But this entire thing reeks of, and him saying that.
I know.
Bringing up your lawyers, why would you even bring that up? I just want to get this out of the way. We're not going to take any questions on this, but I'm going to start with this. These documents were found. They were or are being returned to the National Archives. I don't have any more details for you. Again, I can't answer any questions on that. So that's the end of it. But just wanted to acknowledge that, because I know that's the topic everybody might start on. And you end it right there, because keep in mind, this is the guy who had stepped up to the camera or to the podium repeatedly. They tell me I'm not supposed to. So when he says, my lawyers told me, something tells me he wasn't supposed to say that part.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Later this week, the leaders of the three North American nations are scheduled to meet in Mexico. Among the topics of discussion, Mexico's plans to ban genetically modified corn imports, including the U.S., in 2024. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack at this week's American Farm Bureau Federation convention noted,
"We understand and appreciate some of the challenges that the Mexican president has outlined and concerns he has. But at the end of the day, the agreement we reached with Mexico and Canada is in support of a science-based system. And we're going to continue to convey that until such time as we see that, we're going to continue to push the USMCA."
Meeting the possibility of enforcement of U.S. legal rights under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement if a deal is not reached to lift or modify the proposed ban. Part of Mexico's argument for the ban involves protecting native white corn seed varieties, many of those used in making tortillas and other food products. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, the problem with Biden's response is all it does is make you want to ask another question. And as
exactly.
You said, and that's why you what you stated is the way that he should have stated, which is like, we are concerned about it, and the National Archives is investigating it, but there's nothing I believe else.
I have
can
no
tell
other
you about
details
it.
For
no
you,
details.
But I wanted to address that because right. I know it's top of mind for everybody. But we won't be taking questions.
But when you imply, when the message you send is, my lawyers told me not to say anything. Oh my God!
Well,
you just opened up the biggest door.
What?
Peter Ducey working today? Does Jean Pierre have a press conference?
Right, exactly.
I'm waiting for that one.
Yeah, because I want to know. Even if that were true, that tells me one way or the other. Whether it's true or not, it is bad. It is really, really bad.
Consider yourself canceled if you don't listen nightly. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Carney, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. You know, this is I can't stop laughing. Just the way that different periodicals are writing about the whole top secret thing.
Mm.
This I love. Wall Street Journal. Whatever gods are scripting America's political drama these days, they sure do have a sense of humor. On Monday, CBS broke the news that days before the midterm elections, roughly 10 documents with classification markings were found among Joe Biden's vice presidential files in a private office he once used. A federal prosecutor is investigating, and the FBI is involved. Not even George Santos could make up this plot twist. And as they say, you know, the media is, you know, trying to defend him, stating the Trump and this is different.
Yeah.
And they go, yeah, it's there are differences in the story. They said the analyst or news analysts are cautioning that this apparent mishandling of material is different from Mr. Trump's retention of hundreds of classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago home, which ultimately triggered an extraordinary FBI search last year. That's true as far as it goes. Mr. Biden's office had many fewer documents, and he wasn't wrangling with the National Archives for months over his right to keep them. On the other hand, Mr. Biden, as vice president, has no authority to declassify documents on his own. Unlike the president, he also isn't covered by the Presidential Records Act provision that gives former presidents access to documents from their presidential years in cooperation with the National Archives. Mr. Biden had no authority to hold any such classified documents at all in a private office.
Well,
so, yeah, there are differences.
We asked about that earlier this week, and while I didn't have the answers in front of me, I suspected that that was the case, because it is very different with the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question would be, why would he have those documents at all?
Right. Right. So there would be no haggling back and forth
right.
in a debate what's classified and what's not.
Right.
Because that only involves the president and no one else.
Right. So why did he have them? And why that location?
Well, if by the Democrat standard of how you analyze what Trump did, if Trump had I won't say Mar-a-Lago, but if Trump had an office at the University of, I'm trying to think of what university.
Would allow him to have an office
exactly.
on campus?
I'm trying to find. If Liberty University.
Well, if the now defunct Trump University. Because that's pretty much the only one. But he never taught a class. Biden never taught a class at University of Pennsylvania. He was on the payroll.
Well, let me just put it this way. If Trump had an office in the Liberty University, okay?
Right.
We'll use a little bit because they're considered one of the most conservative colleges in America.
Yeah.
So if he had an office at Liberty University and a section, like a floor, and he had top secret documents that were there, in an office space that was funded $54 million by the Chinese, tell me the response from the media.
It would have been the only story.
Yep.
And still would be. Yeah. So, I don't know. I really don't know.
Okay. I know I'm going to, because occasionally I've heard from them, the folks at Hillsdale College.
All right.
We'll let you in on that. You can have Trump's office. Too.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Hillsdale College will include you in on it.
Okay.
So.
All
right. Or I found another conservative college. This might be better for Trump. Palm Beach Atlantic University is a conservative college.
All right.
West Palm Beach.
All right.
That might be the perfect one.
Right.
Much closer to home. But think about it. If you're off, not even at his residence where he's staying, but at a private office that was funded by the Chinese.
Right.
The organization that runs on the campus that runs that office was funded by the Chinese. And anonymous donations of the Chinese.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, it's going to be an interesting week.
It is.
I also, when we talk about because one of the things we will be talking about this for a while, and this is where we talked about it today also, where are the Republicans going? And one of the things here, when we talk about censorship and new suppression and all that, Holman Jenkins in the Wall Street Journal was writing an article, Hunter Biden, New Suppression, and he gets to what we have said, and I hope the Republicans focus on this point over and over again. And Holman Jenkins is basically saying this might have got lost a little bit last week because there were other things going on, he said. But when Michael Schellenberger, asked the crucial question last week, did the FBI, which possessed the Hunter Biden laptop and knew what it contained, and we've talked about this for the longest time, knowingly mislead media outlets by telling them the New York Post story was the upshot of a Russian intelligence operation? The evidence is suggestive, including the role of former FBI General Counsel James Baker, by then a Twitter employee, in pushing fellow Twitter executives to adopt the FBI's view against their better judgment. In the hours before the story leaked, secret FBI documents, whose contents remain unknown, were urgently shared with Twitter. The sourcing here is impeccable. Official releases of company documents authorized by Twitter's CEO. No, it is not yet a smoking gun, but any news organization that merits its description would by now, if not 2 years ago, be saying, let's find out. Unfortunately, many U.S. reporting outlets face a catch-22, their own complicity. But that's exactly what we have said all the time. That's actually the, that's, there's a ton of different questions out there, but the biggest question is, did the FBI, we know the FBI knew the truth. Did the FBI knowingly, because what they might say is, well, one hand didn't know what the other hand was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you buy that? Would be the question. That's why that portion needs investigating, because that's what smells. That doesn't pass the stink test.
Right.
And the fact, as we know, and this was brought up by Miranda Devine from the New York Post, who wrote the book Laptop from Hell. And she's, it's like, well, how did the FBI know that they had the laptop? So they knew for, you know, they had it from December of, let me get my year right now. 2020? Yeah. I don't remember when they got it. I'm off on my years here for a moment. But I'll put it this way. They had the laptop for a full 10 months. No, it would have been 2019.
2019, yeah.
Yes. Okay, 2019. And then in October of 2020 is when all the warnings
because
went
December
out.
Because December of 2020, it wouldn't have been a problem.
Right.
the election was
right.
over.
that something was going to come out.
Yeah.
That something was going to come out on this. Mm-hmm. The FBI was telling this to Twitter, Facebook, social media, whatever, look for something. And as the one Twitter executive said, they said it was going to be about Hunter Biden to him.
Right.
So, well, how would they know that? How would they know that the story was going to come out? And Miranda Devine says, you know, because the computer store owner, Isaac, gave it to Giuliani. They already had a tap on Giuliani's, you know, they had him... monitor. They were monitoring his email. The mm-hmm. FBI was for another case where they ended up not filing charges on him.
Right.
And she said, they were tapped into us. I was writing Giuliani about it because he was the one that had it.
Mm-hmm.
We wrote the story. The computer guy went to Giuliani. Giuliani, you know, I don't know whether he came to them, whatever, but they found out they were all communicating back and forth. So they knew when the release of the story was going to come out. So the FBI also knew. You and I have talked about that, you know, before the Michael Schellenberger release last week when he asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
That's the really big question.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, is that where somebody goes to jail? And what would the specific charge be?
Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
On that.
Yeah.
But that's the, you know, that none of that passes the stink test. And as you said, he goes, is it a smoking gun? No, but it's close enough where every credible news agency should be investigating what exactly happened there. And the Republicans in the House have to do that. And they know it.
Yep.
They know it.
Right.
So like I said, the next year is going to be unbelievable. With all this
or
stuff.
Or it might be really easy if Biden just keeps handing them gifts. I mean, yesterday was not just the discovery of the documents, but the way that, just a few words.
Taking the fifth.
And bringing up his attorneys and the whole thing. Yeah. Holy cow. Yeah. Now we really have questions.
When I saw that yesterday, I just went, what was he saying? And then when I saw Turley's column, I'm like, Oh.
Yeah.
Was he taking the fifth? Was he saying, my attorneys have told me that you don't want to know?
Immediately when I read it, I thought he phrased that wrong. The way he said it.
Yeah, he was.
What he is saying is his lawyers are saying, don't ask what these papers are.
And therefore he can say, I don't know anything about it.
Right.
I don't know anything about the paper.
Right.
Well, could you have known? Yeah, but my lawyers told me not to.
Right.
I mean, that's as close as taking the, you know, trying to sleaze into the into the fifth.
Right.
That's the message.
And why you would even mention your lawyers.
I know.
To the media yesterday.
Because now that just opens the door. Every question's going to be, what did you mean by that?
This is who Biden is.
Right.
How many times did he step out to the media and say, well, they told me I'm not supposed to take questions. They tell me he was irritated that he had handlers. He doesn't like being told what to do. Something tells me he wasn't supposed to say that part about the lawyers yesterday. But he just said it.
Wow. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. 32 years ago today.
Wedding anniversary.
Yeah. 32 wow. years. And we're still both very young.
Yeah. For being 39, that's amazing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So your parents must have given you a permission slip.
Right. When you exactly. were... Yeah. It was an arranged marriage, that kind of thing. Well, it technically wasn't. We arranged it. Technically was an arranged marriage.
You know, one of the best stories out there, you and I talked about this, and I can't forget about it because it's a story.
And I love my wife dearly. Happy anniversary, honey. That just want to get that.
Okay. That's very important.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Sarah Huckabee story out of Arkansas where she bans the word Latinx from Arkansas government documents, saying it is basically insensitive and insulting
right.
to Latinos.
Right.
Because you've seen the polling out at the majority of...
Exactly.
She's
using the same mindset that the liberals use. Well, this is offensive, so we're going to make sure that we don't do this in any official way. We don't use this kind of language.
Ethnically insensitive and pejorative language has no place in official government
documents. Oh, my gosh. Right out of their own playbook.
And titles. I mean, I saw that. Man, I lost it yesterday when I saw that.
Right out of the liberal playbook.
That is beautiful.
I love it.
Well, what she's doing is what we've always said. Who's ethnically insensitive? Who judges people by groups? Where do the racists actually exist?
Right.
Right there.
Right.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I love it.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
John brings his skewed sense of humor. Jeff brings tips to cut strokes off your next round. Together, it's those weekend golf guys.
They'll pay a lot of money to PXG and Titleist and Callaway and on and on and on, right? How many yards do you think you're going to pick up with that extra driver? I think I can get an extra 5 to 10. What if I give you 15 to 20? Can you pay me more?
Jeff Smith teaches on the sliding scale.
Those Weekend Golf Guys, the podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen. The Bigger Pockets portfolio of podcasts are worthy of your investment.
We're having a real conversation as real estate investors.
New episodes available every day.
It's important to buy where it makes money and not necessarily where you want to travel to.
Bigger Pockets, On the Market, Rookie Real Estate, or Money Podcast.
The purpose of flipping is to create more cash so then you can reinvest into other types of properties.
The Bigger Pockets podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.